We're talking with Jim Elvidge, author of The Universe Solved. He's done some nice work for us on some graphics just to try to bring this back down to Earth or to whatever matrix it is that we are living in. We'll get to figure five at coasttocoastam.com coming up next. And this is the observational model. Who's behind all of this? I mean, if we are living in a programmed reality, we've gone over some of the lists of those that could be behind it, some of the ways in which it could be done. But what if it is extraterrestrial? That's where Jim will pick it up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Programmed realities may be here as early as 30 years from now, or maybe they're already here. We don't really have a way of determining whether or not it's already happened, except for clues, which we're talking about with Jim Elvidge, and models of theory, which we can look at, which we are right now at coasttocoastam.com. I don't know whether you look at them as like, what do you sell, like self-replicating DNA cells, or are we looking at fried eggs or boobs or whatever these are? But it's a very interesting idea. We'll start with figure five, Jim. And this is the observational, theoretical, and ultimate horizon. What do you mean by that?
Let's go into figure five then. So this has to do with the finely tuned nature of the universe. You're probably familiar with a lot of concepts that you've heard from physicists about. Well, they'll say things like, a tiny difference in the ratio of the electric field strength, the gravitational field strength, would have prevented molecules to form. And the current prevailing theory of how the universe was formed is what's called the inflationary Big Bang theory.
Right.
In the very early stages of that, there was a superluminal, faster-than-light inflationary period. Well, if that rate of expansion deviated by one part in a billion in either direction, it would have caused the universe to either collapse or to fly apart so fast that stars would never have formed. So you take all these things into account, numbers of electrons in the universe have to equal the number of protons to an accuracy of a part one in a thousand in order for gravity to work. You take all of these kinds of probabilities into account, you have to multiply them together to get the probability that that we had a universe that would form exactly the way it did, and the probability ends up being astronomical. Hmm. So what these pictures depict is, a way to look at the parallel universes theory. And figure five basically shows Joe Lunchbox there in his sort of observational horizon is the first circle around him. That's as far as he can see with his equipment. The second concentric circle would be his theoretical horizon, which is basically saying nothing. He can't see anything beyond that, no matter how good his equipment is, because it would have to particles would have to go faster than the speed of light to reach him past that point. And then the ultimate horizon, which is the third concentric circle, is the is a concept that there may be other matter out there in addition to beyond his theoretical horizon. This is all kind of cosmological theory that people like Max Tegmark and others have thought through to come up with ideas of parallel universes.
Right. And I can see that. By the way, too, I mean, I think to go back to your point about the probabilities of our universe forming as it is, I think should be amplified. I mean, we talk about this concept that there could be a programmed reality about us right now, and we would have to use some fairly astronomical odds to determine that the likelihood of that actually happening, that it's not Super Bowl Eve tonight, and that there will really isn't a big game tomorrow, and all these other things, sort of extraordinary, chance that could possibly be true, that it's all a creation, until you actually look down and you see the extraordinary odds of these molecules coming together in the first place. So,
right.
Yeah,
there are so many of them that there is an explanation for it, but the explanation is pretty astounding as well. We'll get into that real quickly. Figure six there starts to show the concept of a multiverse, a cosmological multiverse, which shows different theoretical universes within the same inflation bubble. So the concept here is the universe expanded very quickly, but the volume with which you can see is limited. So there are multiple volumes of universe within the inflation bubble. Figure 7 shows separate inflation bubbles, and this is the concept where some inflation bubbles, most of the inflation bubbles, had laws of physics that precluded the ability to form matter, to form stars, to form life. And so this is where you're getting into the idea that shows how few would actually form life. And then figure 8 shows the sort of quantum mechanical idea of parallel universes that says every time a quantum mechanical decision is made, an entire new level 2 multiverse is spawned. And that's in a different space, and I don't really know how to depict that, so I just sort of showed it as layers of pancakes. But the idea is that this is a fairly complex model, and this is the model that cosmologists and quantum mechanics theorists have come up with to explain why our universe is as finely tuned as it is. They take these models, these different multiverse models, and apply something called the anthropic principle, which says that the only reason we are in what appears to be a finely tuned universe is that that's the only one we can be in. All these others are benign. All these others don't have life. So to kind of paraphrase what Jodie Foster's father in Contact said, it's kind of a large waste of space out there.
We look at space, we look at extraterrestrials, and many of us would say that we see something, we've experienced something, we've noticed something, but we don't have any hard evidence of what it is. So some people would look at that and they'd be very critical and they would say, well, that's human beings being the ultimate reality have created something outside of themselves that explains something that's going on internally. They externalize it, they claim to have seen something, or their imaginations get away from themselves. It's really just their brain playing a trick on themselves, and there is no such thing as extraterrestrials. Part of what you're arguing is maybe there are such a thing as extraterrestrials, there's just no such a thing as ourselves.
Possibly. Interesting you bring up the extraterrestrial idea. I think it's been estimated that 150 million people have seen UFOs. I've never seen one, but that's an awful lot of people to discount, even if you take into account some of the ones that were probably, delusional or whatever.
Right.
But there is an actual great explanation for what a UFO is that the programmed reality model can provide. And that is this. It's not hard to program a UFO into a reality. Imagine, again, one of these World of Warcraft-type games. You could very easily create an object that would appear out of nowhere. You could design it in such a way that only certain people would see it. You could make it disappear. You could make it violate the laws of, hydrodynamics or whatever. And, it would be perfectly feasible and possible to do in a programmed reality universe. So a lot of these things that there are anomalous and in a metaphysical sense have a perfectly reasonable explanation if you accept that this could all be part of a program.
Right. Or we exist in a matrix which is controlled by extraterrestrials, and occasionally we glimpse the game players.
Right.
Yeah. And
they allow us to.
They either allow us to, or they cannot prevent us from being able to do that. That something, there is something about the interface between our realities which can't account for everything. It's sort of like a little bit like how there's a flaw, and to go back to the Matrix again, there is a flaw in the Matrix, and it comes down to the concept of choice. And that's the one thing that the architect couldn't get around was choice, and that you could not control 100% of the choices from 100% of the people all the time.
Right. And the best thing that you can do is maybe anticipate a little, maybe do some careful observation and make modifications to accommodate those things. But you're right. That's the one thing that we have the ability to do.
All right. So
what I wanted to get to on this finely tuned universe concept is that there's another concept that has been brought forth called Flexi laws, which is a pretty interesting one as well. And it basically it says that the laws of physics are not immutable, that they may be modified as time goes on. And in fact, I think it's Stephen Hawking that has a concept of quantum cosmology that says the past can be influenced by the present. And the existence of life and observers in the universe today can help bring about the circumstances needed for life to emerge by reaching back into the past through these acts of quantum observation. So it's sort of like it's another explanation for why the universe seems as finely tuned as it does. But I ask the question, which is the more simple explanation, that you have zillions of parallel universes spawned every fraction of a second, and the anthropic principle says that only one of them is the universe you're going to live in, the rest of them are all benign, or you have these complex Flexi laws that allow non-causality and allow the present to influence the past all the way back to creation, or it was just simply programmed that way?
Yikes. I don't know. That's a great question. I mean, where do you come down on that as you posit it?
It seems to me that the program model is far simpler. And right. if you follow the Occam's razor theory, which didn't say that it's always going to be the simplest thing, it's just going to tend to be the more simple solution, I would say the program model seems to be more simple.
Okay. Here, I'm going to now I'll ask you something else. It occurred to me in the midst of what you were saying, and I'm not quite sure that it was related to what you're saying, but I'll throw it at you anyway. Where does God come into this? Let's just separate out the conversation we're having. Where would our Western concept of God come into this?
I would say the Western concept of God is something that we've developed ourselves.
Okay. What if our concept of God is a virus in this matrix? And what if part of the idea of a concept of God is to give us hope against the bleakness of a controlled, programmed reality?
Interesting thought.
I mean, it follows in the sort of completely nonsensical model, in a way, of a God sacrificing, use a Christian model, to a God being killed to reality. And following that as a model, what if that's really what this is about? Is that we have to die to this reality. We have to see that this isn't the ultimate reality. When we die, when we no longer prioritize it as the reality that's most important, that's when we see what's really behind it.
But there is an important thing that we might have missed here, is that we may be spiritual entities. We aren't necessarily, machine-like entities or anything like that. So when you talk about a bleak programmed reality model, it could be just the same kind of thing that other people talk about in different contexts, where spiritual entities are experiencing reality through, through occupying a body, for example.
So instead of it being like the Matrix model, where there is a physical body that has a cord essentially into it, which is generating impressions to this, kind of fairly gelatinous body, right, with no muscle tone or anything, that's laying in a kind of an amniotic type fluid, that instead of that, it's the other way around. We are spiritual beings given a physical impression of what's going on.
Very possible.
And
certainly a lot more hopeful than the other scenario.
Right. No, I totally get that. All right. So let's skip it. Go ahead.
Yeah, if I may, I'd like to go in a little bit to the quantized nature of reality, because that's where I think, it really brings up some questions about who might be behind it, if there is such a thing.
Well, and I feel oddly programmed to let you do that.
Great. People who are familiar with quantum mechanics have heard that that everything is based on the idea of quanta, and reality is defined in discrete units. And that even includes the nature of space. So physical space itself, when you look at things, everything looks like a continuum, and you can tell there's something in between any two points. You look through a microscope, you could look at two points and tell there's things in between there. But when you get down to what's called the Planck length, which is around 10 to the minus 36 meters, there theoretically, according to most quantum physicists, there is nothing in between the points. There's a point, and then there's a point a Planck length away, and nothing exists in between them. So what's similar to that? A computer program itself is similar to that. The screen that the program is rendered on is based on pixels, which are discrete entities just defined by information. The model of a tree in a reality program is going to be limited in terms of the number of pixels that it can generate. You can only get so close to it before it starts looking very pixelated. And, there are programming ways, dynamic resolution to get around things like that. But the bottom line is that just the same way that our space is quantized, so is a computer program quantized. And if you talk about time, it's the same thing. In quantum mechanics, there's a unit of time called a jiffy, which is 10 to the minus 43rd seconds, and that's how long it takes something traveling at the speed of light to cross that Planck length. Nothing exists between two jiffies. So basically, the universe clocks along, ka-chunk, 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 a jiffy at a time, and every jiffy, there's a new construct of matter locked into this Planck-length grid, if you will, and it just changes every jiffy. Julian Barber wrote a book called The End of Time, which basically takes this to its logical conclusion that is, time is just a sequence of states of the universe, and it's kind of illusory in that sense. A computer works exactly the same way. A computer these days, they'll clock at maybe 5 megahertz or 5 gigahertz, 5 billion times a second, and in between each clock cycle, nothing happens. The clock cycle, from one clock cycle to another, the state of the computer program changes. Bits get moved into a register, numbers get added together, they get pushed out into memory, various things like that. But in between the clock cycles, absolutely nothing happens. So the analogy is really kind of perfect between the way a computer works and the way physicists say a reality is in terms of quantum mechanics. And you ask the question, why would it be necessary to have these limits on time and resolution and computing? And it just boils down to money, availability of resource. If you wanted to have infinite resolution on a tree or something that you modeled, it would cost an infinite amount of money to generate an infinite amount of RAM and CPU power to render that. It would be impossible. So why would reality be quantized? Same reason, perhaps.
If it were the I tell you what, I'll hang on for a second because give me an answer to this question. Following each of the different theories of who the usual suspects would be behind the creation of this programmed reality that we may be living in right now, okay? What is the motive? What would be the motive for doing this? And if you can answer that for all of the different ways in which you think the architect might want to design a system like this, and whoever that architect is, we'll talk about that more too coming up next. We'll get to your questions, I think, early. So why don't we go ahead? I see the phones ringing like crazy, and they have been for about an hour. So I want to do this. I'm going to give the numbers coming up in just a minute for you to join the conversation. We may not go full bore yet with your questions and comments, but we'll start trickling them in the next half hour, and then, of course, we'll load them up big in the last hour, coming up with Jim Elvidge, electrical engineer and author of the book, The Universe Solved, on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. So we're talking with Jim Elvidge about alternative realities. We may be living in one right now. How would you know? And I keep thinking about that as I'm going over some news stories that were just posted by Sean at coasttocoastam.com, some of the hot stories for Sunday, February 3rd, already coming through. For example, the story about researchers make tiny radio from nanotubes. Or how about this? Scientists create no tears onions. Did they? Or maybe we only accept the tears because we think we're supposed to cry, because that's how we've been programmed. How about electricity woman with amazing powers, a woman able to cause lights to flicker when she gets stressed? And or the Navy's incredible test of a new sci-fi weapon. You can read more about at coasttocoastam.com, or this story. Bouts of hysteria after ghostly sightings. 200 students convinced they saw ghosts flying around their school. Well, that's fascinating. It makes me think, what if ghosts were just data left behind on some hard drive, on some giant machine somewhere that's creating this matrix reality in which we live? Maybe it's a past game and it got, you know, cleaned off but never fully erased from the database. And that's when ghosts occur, when we come across those glitches that didn't get fully scanned off of the hard drive. I don't know. I'm just thinking. But then again, I'll be thinking about this for a while yet. We're not done. We'll start dribbling in your phone calls next, too, for Jim Elvidge. And we'll see where the conversation goes next on what could be the possible motive behind the various potential creators of this matrix next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Well, the phones are filling up, at least I think they are, and we'll get to that in just a second. Other people trying to poke through the whole of their reality and talk with Jim Elvidge, electronic engineer and or electrical engineer, I guess, and the author of The Universe Solved. So, Jim, let's go back over this. The various people who you think might be the creators, the designers, the architects of this, and what would be their motives?
Okay, one of the first ones we could explore is that it's us at some point in the future. I don't know if you're familiar with the simulation argument.
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay, it was put forth, there was a paper written by Nick Bostrom, who's a philosopher from Oxford. And basically he says that we will get to a point where we are able to create these ancestor simulations. That point he determines, or he calls the post-humanist phase. And he says there are essentially three options. There are three possibilities. One, we don't get there because we destroy ourselves in the meantime. That's sort of a pessimistic point of view. Two, we consciously decide not to pursue this avenue of inquiry, and so we don't get there. And I think we can probably discard that, because when faced with any kind of technology, no matter what the dangers might be, you know, nanotech or nuclear energy, you know, building super colliders that could create miniature black holes, we just blindly, you know, pursue that. So I would throw that option out. And then the fourth one, or the third one, is that we do achieve a post-human phase. And at that point, we run millions of what he calls ancestor simulations, meaning let's simulate a period of time, you know, prior to when we exist and experience that period of time. So the odds that we're living in one of those, as opposed to living in the one period of time before we got to that point, is very, very high. So in other words, the pessimistic point of view in his theory is that we destroy ourselves in the next 30 years. The optimistic point of view is that we're almost definitely living in a simulation.
All right, but stop right there and let me ask you again, what would be the motive for creating the ancestor simulations? Would it be so that we can play out scenarios and better understand how we got to this post-human phase, or to change the future of the post-human phase?
Maybe.
Or just because we're bored with the post-human phase and we want to know what was life like under simpler times, ours.
Would you be interested in experiencing what it was like to live during the time of the pyramids?
Depends who I am in that scenario. I don't want to be building them. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, I think that's interesting, but I would then if I were that person that would be going back to experience that, if, say, for example, you offered me the opportunity to go back and experience that, I would want the sensory experience and the conscious experience of being back there, but I wouldn't want to be disconnected from my future self so that I was unaware that I was a future self put into a past scenario.
What if you were disconnected temporarily and you told, you know, whatever mechanism it was, that an hour from now, end my simulation and bring me back to reality?
What if I had flippers for feet and I had, yeah, I see what you're saying. Like, this
but
is all
that sort
of like
possible.
The old Peter, like the old Peter Potamus cartoon or something, where we could yell professor or something, and then we could go tumbling into another reality. It's interesting. All right. So that's one, is almost sort of a gaming thing, or just
right.
kind of a curiosity satisfaction.
And I think, to be honest, that's probably less likely, partly because of this whole quantum mechanical argument, which we could get into in a little more detail. But, you know, you talked about some others, the biological extraterrestrials, perhaps.
Right. What would be their motive?
Maybe their purpose is to create an intelligent species by helping us to develop values and intelligence.
Okay. They're doing a crappy job. Okay. Good. They're not very good at it either, then. Okay.
Maybe it's simply for the fun of playing God. I mean, we think it's human nature for us to play God with animals, with dolls, with these massively multiplayer online role-playing games or simulated baseball games, fantasy
right.
football. Maybe it's Blonkian nature to play God with fabricated universe bubbles and nanobot swarms.
Well, to use that comparison, then, if they're playing us like we would play Madden 08, right? Football.
Right.
If we were doing, then their lives must really suck, because if this is interesting to them, if this feels like, oh my God, it's the most exciting thing, then their lives must be really tragically boring.
Right.
Okay. So I get that too. All right. Well, let's get a couple of calls in here, and I'd like to, we'll explore more on this along the way, I'm sure. East of the Rockies, Carl is in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, for Jim Elvidge on Coast to Coast AM. Let me get you brought up there. Go ahead, Carl. You're talking with Jim Elvidge.
Yes. Very awesome guest. I didn't think you could beat the Tony guy, but you definitely have him beat, okay?
Okay, good.
Thank
Go
you, Carl.
No problem. I've thought about this quite a bit. And the first thing, when you were talking about the memory, you realize that the computer memory, you know, how much of a massive amount of memory space it would take to do this.
Absolutely.
But you got to realize, what is memory? Besides what you're experiencing right now at this moment, I mean, what do you have before that? It's all a comparison, or it's all in relation to what you're experiencing right now. You know, I'm standing out in front of my house right now, and a minute ago, I'm pretty sure I was standing here because of relationships, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So you wouldn't need that much. You wouldn't need that much space for the memory of what actually happened.
Okay.
I agree with you. In fact, there are some who think that the brain is more like a cache and basically retains the memories of what you most recently need or what you're using on a day-to-day basis, and that, you know, perhaps when you need something else, you need to pull in that, you know, name of somebody you forgot 30 years ago, you pull that out from some external mechanism.
Some external mechanism, meaning some outside hard drive or something? What do you mean by that?
Well, possibly. You know, the Theosophical Society calls it the Akashic Record, right?
Oh, okay. Oh, I see what you're going for. Right. Okay. Interesting. I love that. All right, Jay, west of the Rockies, Salt Lake City, Utah, on Coast to Coast AM for Jim Elvidge. Jay?
Well, good morning to y'all.
Hello,
and to you.
I just was thinking earlier, and I'm going to have to wind back the way back machine here, but you were talking about playing God. And I got to thinking about that when you were saying how they might make some sort of an alteration to the program as a guiding hand or something of that nature. And so you know, kind of nagged at me a little bit. But then I got to thinking about how back in history, so many of the great discoveries of the world were created, you know, at the same time on different continents when there really wasn't communications between those continents. And I'm going way back to, like,
yeah, sure,
and the wheel.
Right, or even the pyramids again, simultaneous appearance of the pyramids, right.
This is kind of like the 100th monkey effect.
Right.
And I've heard people say that people who are, you know, for the first time presented a Rubik's Cube can solve it faster now than when the Rubik's Cube was first developed.
So,
okay.
Anyway, I guess that's just giving some credence to that possibility.
Exactly. See, and I would think I've come to a point where I throw it faster than I used to throw it. That's why I pick it right up and now I'm throwing it right away. So Jay, if you were to look at this and you were to say you're living, could you find any reason to support the fact that the reality that you're experiencing is an authentic one? Jay?
I'm not real sure, because, you know, there are times that I think that reality is, you know, is just out the window entirely.
Okay.
I just can't fathom, you know, what's going on around me.
If reality is ultimately unreliable, on what do we rely? On which can we, what is it that is dependable for us? Let me ask that of Jim. Jim?
Well, all we are relying on is basically our memories. So our memories give us the entire foundation for our reality. It helps us know who we like, who we don't like, who we work for, who we trust, how we behave. And if those things are implanted in us, then we were going to behave the same way, but that's what we're relying on.
Okay. You know, I think the idea about exploring the past, I've had this thought a couple of times that you've mentioned that, is I see that in very directly in one experience, in that we tend to rewrite, as human beings, we rewrite the past anyway.
Yes,
you know, the victors tell the story.
Exactly.
So, you know, if they're writing history and then we are, then history is not some set of facts, but rather an interpretation of events, which might change over time, and it might change as our current reality needs it to change. You know, and I think that too is something we have to consider. In a way, aren't we already doing what it is you suggest in the future we might be able to do, which is to go back and simulate a reality or simulate a past? And I think we can, at least tangentially, we could say that we already do that. We already simulate our history as our present circumstances warrant it.
We do, and the observer effect can be applied to, in addition to quantum mechanics, but you know, almost to everything. It does seem like as we observe things, they develop.
Okay, let's go to Levi. He's in Las Vegas on Coast to Coast AM for Jim Elvidge. Levi?
Yeah, hello, how you doing?
Hi, Levi.
Go for it.
Good. You know, I'm listening, and it's terribly, terribly fascinating, but I keep thinking, where does God fit into the mix? I mean, I'm not a very religious person now, but I was raised in the LDS church, and I remember being, you know, 8 to 10 years old going, God, you know, if this God that I'm being taught is responsible for the entire world around me, what would make it so difficult for him to simply, you know, implant this memory into me of my entire past life? Like, you know, for instance, are these my real parents? Or, you know, is this my real, the last 10 years of my life, is this all real? If he can create the earth, why can't he just create some memory into my head? You know, so I guess my question is that, you know, what's the difference between an omnipotent God and this omnipotent machine or computer programmer who is simply punching things in, saying, you know, playing God?
Not really that much, I think, in the way that you describe it. I think both concepts are equally valid.
That would seem to imply, though, that if we question our parentage, you know, and we wonder whether or not that's just an implanted memory, wouldn't that seem to back up the idea that every when every teenager goes through that phase of being incredulous at the idea that these could possibly be their parents, that they're right, that maybe that it's a natural process that a human being goes through when they're a teenager to say, these can't possibly be my parents, and that really that's the only, and they're right, but they talk themselves out of it somehow along the way. Wildcard line, Ghost is in Houston on Coast to Coast AM for Jim Elvidge. Ghost, is that your first name?
Nah, it's just a nickname.
Okay, love that. Yeah, go for it.
Call me that and stuff. So, but now I got to pick his brain about something.
I've had it.
You know, I've been listening to stuff. I've been in and out of the car and stuff. But you know, in the first part, you know, he was talking about how things happen, how everything's like programmed and stuff. But what about like when people say, you know, well, that was supposed to happen. You know, that was meant to happen and stuff like that, you know, as far as, you know, predestiny and stuff like that. I wanted to get his take on that and how he felt about that. But also, the number one question I have is, define reality. What is reality? Is it just, you know, I'm feeling the steering wheel or feeling my hair or something like that? Is it just a pulse of electrons and neutrons just passing through the body? Or is there something more tangible to it? And you know, the other thing is that, you know, the human mind is built like a computer. I mean, you know, with all the electrical currents going through our bodies and stuff and different signals being sent, I mean, it's the same thing as a computer, you know, the way it's built.
All right, let's get Jim in there on that one, Ghost. Go ahead.
Sure. First of all, regarding the predestiny question, I think the feeling that something is predestined might also be an indicator of a programmed reality that,
right.
You know, boy, this feels like it was something that was meant to happen. If it was really purely random, you might not feel that so often. So that is kind of a good indicator. And what is reality? Reality is what we perceive. So if our perception is really just a bunch of neurochemical electro processes in our brain, that is what's defining reality, and how they get there is really what we're talking about.
Okay. I can swing with that.
Does that settle that? Okay, very good. Now keep both hands on that imaginary wheel while you're driving.
Right,
okay.
I agree with that.
All right. God bless you. Be careful out there. And everybody else, hang on. We'll get to as many people as we can. We'll try to get more questions, actually, in the last hour with Jim Elvidge, who's an electrical engineer and author of The Universe Solved. Have you been to the website yet at coasttocoastam.com? I'm also going to get my blog up. I didn't do it earlier. Just got so sidetracked with this conversation, I just forgot to click it in. But I'll do that coming up, too. So if you missed crypto news, it'll be there. Give me a minute or two, and I'll catch up with you. On Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett.